Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy podcast is provided by DSL Extreme. Call 866-2-GET-NET or DSL Extreme.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the premier radio networks, including XM Channel 152 and 31 of the finest talk stations in the nation, on Saturday, September 8th, 2007. This is show 385. Enjoy. A good day to you all across the Geek Nation. Leo Laporte here. I am the Tech Guy.
The one, the only.
Oh, there may be imitators, but I'm the one. Since 1991, I think. 16 years of talking tech on the radio and TV, and I love doing it. I'm not bored. There's nothing, it changes so much. I can't think of anything a talk show host could cover, really, that would change as much as technology. And yet, and it's fun. It's toys, and yet it's important, isn't it? I mean, these are things that affect our lives. Lots to talk about this week, certainly. And I think we're going to get into the iPhone thing in a little bit. So we'll certainly talk about that. But let me give you the phone number, 8888-ASK-LEO. If you'd like to ask a question, make a comment, rail at Steve Jobs, 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. That's 888-827-5536. There's also a website, techguylabs.com. And there, thanks to DSL Extreme, our sponsor, there's a great chat room, which usually has several hundred people in it. That's irc.dslextreme.com. Don't be intimidated if you've never done an IRC chat. If you go to irc.dslextreme.com, a chat client will be provided for you if you don't have one. And it's heavily moderated. Dan and Dustin and Shuby and Mike are really keeping an eye on things in there. So it's friendly, family friendly, as you would expect. Lots of ways to participate in the show, but I really, the call is the best way. It's hard to get through, I know, and don't give up. We want to hear from you. Rebecca's very nice. She'll be gentle. 8888-ASK-LEO. I kind of feel bad for Steve Jobs. Oh, I know, I shouldn't. I know I shouldn't. So Wednesday, Apple had that party. The beat goes on. The big announcement. I was so wrong. I was sure, A, that they would announce that they finally have Beatles music in the iTunes store, and B, I thought to celebrate they might have, this is my pop fantasy, Paul and Ringo on stage. Maybe even, this is an even wilder fantasy somebody suggested to me, but I really like it. It's the kind of thing Steve Jobs would go for, maybe even with big screen video of John and George, who of course is no longer with us, to complete the set. Wouldn't that have been cool? I have a feeling that what happened, I mean, look, it was called The Beat Goes On. They had a lot of Beatles imagery in the invitation. The Beat Goes On happens to be the last sentence of the last press release from the Beatles before they broke up. I mean, in all sorts of ways, it was a pretty strong indicator they were going to do a Beatles thing. I think it's pretty clear that it just didn't come through in time. Didn't happen. They've got now John's music on iTunes. They've got Paul's music on iTunes. They just added Ringo's music on iTunes. I mean, come on. They're inching towards it, but there's, they got to dot the I's, cross the T, whatever. The reason I feel a little sorry for Steve is not that, although you've got to figure he's a little disappointed he couldn't announce that, since the whole thing was clearly geared around it. He did announce a lot of really great new products, very interesting new products. Have you seen much press of that? No. Because he announced something that irritated and annoyed and ticked off the Apple fanboys so much that nothing else has gotten any attention at all. He announced a $200 price drop on the iPhone. Came out June 29th. Here we are, barely 2 months later. And he's already dropping at 33%. And the fanboys hit the fan. They were not happy. Now, two things have happened here. One is, that people who hated the iPhone anyway are just chortling. And there's a lot of them. A lot of people who are angry at the iPhone for a variety of reasons because it was so heavily overcovered and they're sick of it and so forth. And I know every time the word iPhone comes out of my mouth, there are people who just turn beet red and smoke comes out of their ears because I don't want to hear about this. Well, I'm not talking about the iPhone, really. I'm talking about something interesting that's happening to corporate and corporate governance here. So bear with me for a minute. So Steve announces a $200 price drop. Now remember that the other issue, there's two issues, as I said. The other issue is, so you've got the iPhone haters, but also you've got the fanboys. And this is a double-edged sword for Apple. Apple lives on its cult of the Mac. And there are just, you know, a million or two people that will just buy anything Apple does. No questions asked, lined up, boom, they'll plunk down their money. Those are the people who are waiting in line for the iPhone. And it's great to have a fan base like that. It's what makes Apple a unique company. Gil Amelio, who was the CEO of Apple, much troubled CEO of Apple some years ago, just before they brought Steve Jobs back. Gil Amelio said, I thought I was running a company. I had no idea I was going to face this fan base, that I was running a fan club here. And that's the trouble with Apple. And it always has been. You've got these devoted fans who are really a blessing, but they're also a curse because one wrong turn and they'll turn on you and viciously. And that's what's happened here. All those people who wait in the line for hours and hours to pay $600 for the iPhone are now sending furious screeds to Steve Jobs saying, "What have you done? You don't know." I mean, he felt the heat. He felt the heat big time. In fact, a day later announces a $100 credit. It's a $100 store credit, which means it costs Apple, you know what, $50. Their profit margin on the phone is almost $300. He could have easily given back all $200 in cash if he'd wanted to and still made money on every single phone. But that's a lot of money. If you sold a million phones, it's $200 million. That's not an easy thing to do for anybody. Remember, Apple's publicly held, so he's got to deal with stockholders too. $50, you know, out of his pocket. People go into the Apple store, they probably spend more than that $100 anyway. It's probably a plus for him. He had to do it. That's the point. He had no choice. But here's the sad thing, the reason I feel bad for Steve Jobs. In all of this furor, the new iPods have completely been ignored. There's been no attention paid at all. CNN wanted me to do something on CNN. What do they want to talk about, the new iPods? No. Well, probably initially, until this iPhone thing. And now that's all anybody wants to talk about, every interview I've done. It's not about the iPod Touch. It's not about the 160 gigabyte iPod. It's not about the video on the new tiny little nanos. No, it's about this $200 price cut. It's kind of sad, isn't it? Kind of sad. Now, I paid $600 for this phone. And yeah, I mean, you know, it hurts you when you see $200. I had to buy it because I had to review it. So, I had to get it at that price. Everybody who's covered technology has seen price drops like this. And believe me, you've seen price drops like this for cell phones for years. How much did the Razr cost when it first came out? It was $500 or $600. Now you get it for $88 at Walmart. That's a pretty big price drop. Now, the difference is it happened awfully fast. I don't think Steve had much choice. I think in order to fit in with the prices of the rest of the stuff, it had to be this new price. And I think, now there's two schools of thought. One is, the iPhone wasn't selling very well, and so Steve had to really kick it. And by the way, they're still making plenty of money on it, even at the $400 price. That's one school of thought. Jobs says in his letter, we wanted to really, you know, have a big Christmas. We want to make that iPhone even more successful. That could be spin. I don't know. We do know that the iPhone is selling better than any other smartphone on the market. And you know, don't confuse Apple's expectations with analysts' expectations, because the analysts are the ones who have been inflating the expectations. Apple's actually all along been kind of downplaying and saying, well, we'd like to sell a 10 million in the first, what was it, year and a half. You know, Apple is absolutely on target for their sales predictions. It's the analysts they're not living up to. Stock price took a big hit. Big hit. The market didn't like it, but the market has taken as a total, at least in these kinds of short-term things, pretty idiotic. It could well have been a bunch of Apple enthusiasts selling their stock, doing a little profit-taking, and buying back, and I'll bet they'll buy back. It'll go right back up. And but the point is that Steve is he's a very smart guy. I think more than anybody else, more than any CEO I know, Steve is a chess master. He thinks ahead. He thinks very long term. And every move he makes, and you know, I've been bitten by this. I've often said, "Oh, Steve, what are you doing? You're crazy." And then a year later, Steve knew what he was doing. So this is a rare misstep for Steve. And I'm even reluctant to say it is a misstep because who knows what Jobs is thinking? He could have planned wheels within wheels down the road 3 years from now. It could all make perfect sense. But I'm thinking, second guessing the master here, which has been a mistake for me in the past. But I really think that he made a big mistake here. He underestimated the reaction from the fanboys. It was so virulent, he had to respond. And in doing so, it's what's really sad is nobody's talking about these new iPods. And they're really, frankly, very exciting. Will they still sell? Probably. But I don't think the awareness is going to be out there. I don't think people are going to go to the store and say, I want that 160 gigabyte iPod Classic. Or, look, now I don't have to buy an iPhone. I didn't want AT&T. I didn't want a phone. I just wanted that touch iPod. Now I can get it. Nobody's talking about those new products. We will talk about them a little later on. I think they're actually very significant. That new Nano, that little tiny Nano, which, yes, it's the squat Nano we thought it would be, but it's tiny when you hold it in your hand. It's very thin, and it plays back video nicely. So it's an interesting product. What do you think? Did Jobs make a big mistake, or does he know what he's doing? Is he crazy like a fox? 8888 Ask Leo. Let's talk about it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. How do you like that? Drumming away, yeah. 8888 Ask Leo. I might point out, by the way, that there are different ways to get your money back from Apple. As I understand it, and I may be wrong, but don't you have 90 days to return that phone for a restocking fee? So that's another way. In fact, you want to send a clear message to Apple. That would be one way to get your money back. I made a point of buying mine with an American Express card because of the price guarantee. So I can get the $200 refunded from American Express. I always buy cell phones with my Amex card because also they have the drop protection or whatever. So at first I went, and I breathed a sigh of relief. But honestly, I think a lot of the Apple, hardcore Apple fanboys are going, we paid $200, but we're the first on our block to have an iPhone. And I do have to say, at $399, the iPhone is a much more attractive phone, isn't it? Don't you think they will sell more? I mean, wasn't it ultimately the right thing to do? I mean, doesn't it seem that way? Mike on the line. We can talk about it. Mike on the line from Santa Barbara, California. Mike, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. How are you, Mike?
Hello, Leo.
Hello, Mike.
Big Mike, Santa Barbara. How are you?
Great. Good to talk to you.
Good. Hey, by the way, I don't hate Steve Jobs.
Okay.
I think he's brilliant.
You too. Now, so you think this was a smart move?
Well, you know what? For $599, I thought the phone was expensive.
Yeah.
But for $399, I'd probably go out and buy one.
Exactly. I mean, the question is why he charged that much in the first place. And I guess, really, the answer is because he knew there'd be a million Apple fanboys who would buy it.
Exactly. And you know what? I'd buy anything you put out anyway.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of people do that. Absolutely. I want to defend myself. I bought it. I had to buy it because I had to review it. And Apple wasn't giving me a review unit. In fact, I just about a week ago, AT&T said, do you want to review it? And of course, yeah, that'd be great. I'll review it 2 months after it comes out. That's not going to work.
Yeah. Well, you know, like you said, you can return it. You got 90 days.
Exactly. Now, I'm still happy I bought it. I think it's a great phone. So, I don't know. That's brilliant marketing. That's brilliant business. You charge the maximum rate for the first 2 months. You bleed dry your biggest fans. It's a little cynical, but it worked. You bleed dry your biggest fans, and then you drop the price to what it should have been all along, and you get the rest of them.
Yeah, well, he ticked off a lot of people, but you know what? It's starting to look really good now. And how about the new iPod? Have you seen that? It's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, and that was my point, is that in a way, all of this furor has eclipsed the new iPods. Now, maybe he'll get coverage next week. I don't know. But, I mean, it seems like the mainstream media hasn't covered the new iPods. They're much more interested in this $200 price cut.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, the reason I called is because I have a Razer, and I'm using AT&T. And AT&T, of course, doesn't offer call blocking.
Right.
You know how you get call blocking on your home?
Right.
Is there any way to get call blocking on your cell phone?
Oh, I mean, I don't see. Let's see. Some cell phones, and I don't know if a Razer will do this, but some cell phones do, in fact, allow you to force people to voicemail based on number. It's a cell phone specific thing. And I don't know if any of the AT&T phones that they sell do that. And I don't know if the Razer does that.
Well, the Razer doesn't. So I called AT&T, and they said they just don't offer it. Is there like a third-party software you can install?
Well, I can't think of how you would do that. Yeah, maybe there is. I don't know of one. I'll ask. The Razer is kind of limited in terms of what software you can add to it. It's not a smartphone, so.
Right.
Let me think about it. You know, there are those funny services. You see them advertised all the time where your ex-girlfriend calls and it plays a funny answering message back.
Right. Well, that's just an alert.
I wonder how could you force your, I don't know, could you force your calls through somebody? I bet you could. Mike, my answer really is, I don't know, but keep listening. Somebody's going to call and say, oh yeah, you could do it this way. He's got an AT&T phone. He's got a Razer. He wants to block calls. Who do you want to block calls from? Bill collectors, ex-girlfriends?
IRS.
You know, I love doing these ads for Phone Power because they have that feature, the excommunicator. And once you start thinking about who you don't want to hear from, it actually...
Well, does it make sense to have it, though?
Yeah, it's very attractive.
You got a phone. You get a phone call. They all have a view. You can see who's calling, but don't we want to get past that point?
Yeah. Force them to voicemail every time.
Right, right.
You know, I love that idea. I get a lot of calls from PR people. I have like an automatic PR filter that just says, oh, yeah, thanks for calling. Go away.
Exactly.
Mike, I don't know, but keep listening. Somebody will absolutely know. I mean, that's the greatest thing about this show is we've got this wonderful, massive audience of geeks in the chat room and on the air, and somebody will come up with something. Lisa, San Marcos, California. Hey, Lisa, welcome to the Tech
Leo, Guy. I need some help.
Yes.
I have an XP Service Pack 1. It's an old computer. I call it my dinosaur, but it served its purpose. And I also have a teenager that has loaded up a bunch of viruses.
Thank you, teenagers. What would the antivirus people do without teenagers?
Yes, tell me about it. They would be out of business.
Yep.
But anyways, what I've been trying to do is I've been trying to restore back to a previous date, and I have tried so several times.
Yeah.
And the computer says that it's an incomplete restore.
Sometimes, in fact, this is a very common trick malware plays on you. It destroys the restore points.
Oh, don't tell me that. Okay. Yeah. I don't want to reinstall Windows just yet because I have, my life is on the computer. I've got pictures and documents and things of that nature. Is there any other suggestion?
Lisa, you have to.
I have to reinstall.
You have to. So back up. It's an opportunity to back up. Once malware is on your system, especially if it's malware that's this aggressive, the only way to be sure you're safe is to back up from a known good copy of the store. Sorry. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Carbonite automatic secure computer backup over the internet. Try it free at carbonite.com. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's go to line 3. Mark is in Santa Ana. Oh, before I talk to you, Mark. Well, actually, I'm talking to you already, Mark. Before I say anything, we have a number of people suggesting things like Jangle.com and GrandCentral.com as ways to block callers. The problem with doing that is you have to change your phone number. So, yeah, there are systems you could use, but you'd have to use a new phone number and then block them before they got forwarded to your cell. All right. Sorry about that, Mark. Taking up your time. I apologize.
No, it's okay, because I got to get back to my computer, and my wife's going ahead of me to turn off Cinderella on the TV.
You got Cinderella running. You got your computer running. You're a media family. That's great. What can I do for you?
I have a question. I've got a Word document. It's got some pictures. It's got some text boxes. And I would like to make that Word document show up just the same as it is or as close as possible in an email. I don't want to send it as an attachment. I just want it to be able to...
Well, of course, you can use Word as your editor in Outlook. But the problem is what you're going to end up doing is you're going to create an HTML email or an RTF email, and it's going to require that the recipient support that. And you're going to have some issues if, for instance, you use fonts that the recipient doesn't have and so forth. So there's limits on what you can do. If you're not willing to do an attachment, I mean, of course, you know you could do a PDF and send it exactly as it looks on your screen. But there's limits as to what you can do if you're not willing to do something like that.
Okay.
Does that make sense? You can send... Look in your... You're using Outlook?
Yeah.
Yeah. Look in Outlook. You'll see you have a choice of editors that you can use. And you can use Word as an editor.
Okay.
And since most of your correspondents are probably using Outlook on the other end, I don't anticipate a problem. I'd be careful about what fonts you use.
Right.
There may be a feature, there may be a setting, I know there is in Word itself, there may be a setting in email as well to include the fonts, but that's going to blow the file size up a little bit. And then, by the way, they will be attachments. I'm sure they don't allow that because it would confuse people to include fonts. But you'll get a lot of formatting. You'll be able to do most of what you want to do.
All right, great. I appreciate that.
Thanks,
thank you.
Mark. I appreciate the call. Dan, Barrington, Rhode Island. Hey, Dan, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, it's great to talk to you.
Good to talk to you.
Really appreciate all the advice you give me over the years. You've turned me into my own little Leo Laporte of my community of friends.
That's great. I love it.
But this is one thing I can't get my thick-headed Italian head wrapped around. Do I have to give up TiVo to go to HD? But I can't. I'm on DirecTV, and I loathe the fact to give switch to cable, since DirecTV appears to have the better choices right now, and I don't want to use the cable card, and I don't know what to do.
There's good news. DirecTV, which was moving away from...
I have the cheesiest rabbit ears hooked up to it.
DirecTV was moving away from TiVo. Remember, they wanted to start doing their own thing.
Yeah.
The good news is they've kissed and made up.
I can't believe you're telling me this.
Isn't that great news? So it looks like they will be, the TiVo's back with DirecTV. And I believe that soon, if they don't have it already, they'll have an HD DVR that has TiVo on it. You know, they already have HD DVRs for your cable company that aren't TiVo, for DirecTV, I should say, that aren't TiVo. Right. Because they'd use that DirecTV operating system. But it's my understanding that now that they're back in bed, that they're going to do an HD TiVo as well.
Oh, this is fabulous news. Yeah. I didn't know that.
I would contact DirecTV and find out, and maybe somebody will tell me when the new DirecTVs are going to have the TiVo.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go back to watching tennis game because it looks great on the rabbit ears right now.
I'm looking right now at weakknees.com, and the Series 3 HD TiVos, I wonder if these are, I guess they're only for cable right now. But it's only a matter of time before DirecTV goes back to that. Because nobody wants the DirecTV operating system. They don't want TiVo.
Yeah, well, that's what everything I've been reading on all the TiVo community boards and all that, and they're all complaining to DirecTV. Why did you drop them? What's going on? Why is it happening? You know, we don't want to lose TiVo. Why would you lose TiVo? So,
well, I think that they probably heard what you were saying. So they've extended their contract. They've agreed to go to get back. I thought this was all over, but they're going through 2009 now. So I suspect what you're going to see, if you haven't already, and I'll check, but I suspect what you're going to see is the TiVo DVRs come back for HD as well. Check with your DirecTV guy, because I wouldn't be surprised if they're doing it already. It is better.
Well,
Do you have a TiVo now?
Do I have what?
A TiVo now?
Oh, yeah. I've had TiVo for 8 years. That was one of the initial people.
Yeah.
I still have it. In fact, I bought the Lifetime service. I don't use that as my main TiVo anymore. I switched to a dual DirecTV TiVo about a year and a half ago, and both of them are rock solid, work perfectly. No, love it. Wouldn't want to give it up. And that's where my dilemma is. I went out.
No,
and
I agree with you.
HD TV, and I'm like, okay, now what am I going to do with this thing? It's sitting here.
Well, you know, I mean, you can use the, I guess in the interim, you could use the box. I guess it's a Hughes box that they provide for HD until DirecTV puts out a TiVo.
That's what I was thinking of doing. Just, you know,
because I mean, you're renting it anyway, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So they'll, you know, you just say, hey, okay, guys, I want to switch now. They are doing, you know, I'm looking, I mean, they're definitely doing DVRs with TiVo, but they're just not, and despite the HD VR2 name, it's still a standard definition TiVo, but I have a feeling that's just around the corner.
Well, I hope you're right. I hope it does come true, and I appreciate
Yeah. Because you're, and I agree with you, Dan. I mean, TiVo's the champagne. There's, you know, I don't get why the satellite companies and cable companies have decided, oh, we're going to do our own thing. I guess because they don't want to pay license fees to TiVo. I don't know. Maybe because, and this may be the real reason, maybe because all the advertisers are bitching and moaning over the 30-second skip. They don't like it that TiVo makes it so easy to skip ads. In fact, I think these companies would like to come up with their own boxes. In fact, they've made noises about this that don't let you skip at all. Make you watch the ads. That'll go over well. Why is it that companies don't understand that consumers have pretty strong feelings about this stuff? And you know what? they're gonna act on them now. This is what I love. I think the internet and computers and technology and the spread of all this information has really galvanized consumers to stand up for themselves. And a lot of companies are still in that 50s, 60s, 70s mentality where you give them what you think is best for you, and they'll take it. Look, isn't this what Apple's learned? And now, thanks to the internet, the consumers can organize. They can say, hey, there is a better solution. And stand up for it. They can take care of themselves now. And I think that's really good. It looks like they are selling a TiVo now. I'm looking through here. Well, it's hard to find. The HR10-250, which is an HD TiVo, is out there if you can look for it. I'm sure somebody will call and let us know. Rich is on the line. Edmonton, Alberta. Hello, Rich from Cowboy Country.
You got it, buddy. You got it.
Loyal Country.
ZDTV on my big satellite dish down in Oklahoma in June of 1998 when I called on your second call for help. So
you're kidding. Oh, Rich, it's nice to talk to you. Here we are 8-9 years later.
And you know what? We're still confused. Isn't it wonderful?
Yeah. Thank goodness. I wouldn't have work.
I've got a T-shirt that says, no, I will not fix your computer. I have to wear it a lot.
I love that T-shirt. So you're the guy people go to, right?
Yeah. Oh, man. For a long time, my wife thought it was stenciled on my forehead somewhere, you know, where people would ask me about their computer. Strangers, you know. I've got a couple. Real quick, I'm a pastor for Lutheran Church Canada up here in Edmonton.
Excellent.
I have a website that I do a audio blog on, as well as it's a stream of consciousness type of blog.
I think that's a great idea, though. What a way to extend your reach and inspirational messages. And I mean, I think that's a great idea.
Absolutely. It's on Vox, sacredenergy.ca. And they make it so easy, as you know, because I'm in your neighborhood as well. But I really enjoy it there. And what we're looking to do is adding live streaming, but more importantly, archived video audio for studies, classes, teaching opportunities, worship, things like that. And I know you're obviously heavy into this and you're doing this all the time. And rather than reinvent the wheel here, can you make a recommendation as to the types of things that are going to be important for me as I start this?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You'd ask me this a year ago, I'd say, oh, you can't do that. It's impossible. Now it's totally possible. The internet moves so fast. I would recommend Ustream.tv. There are a number of ways, a number of companies that do this, but Ustream seems to be pretty good. The reason this now all is appearing, well, there are a number of reasons, but one is that Flash, that macromedia Adobe technology that you see that animates web pages, has built in and makes it so easy as the capability of capturing a camera and streaming it via Flash. So that's how Ustream, Stickum, blog.tv, blip.tv, all these sites are working now. They can, in fact, YouTube too. You can record something, a response on YouTube just from your little, webcam. So this is using Flash. So you'll need, obviously, a camera. It's hard to do more than one camera, so I'd recommend sticking with one. It does capture audio and video. Ustream allows you to record as well. So you'll stream it out live. And as many as we've had 2,000 people watching our video on the show.
No kidding.
Yeah. Wow. So as many as 2,000. And then you press a button that says record while you're streaming it. It also records it and saves it on the Ustream site. And that you would embed on your Vox blog. Because Vox now allows embedding. So you just take the embed code from Ustream.tv and embed it on your Vox blog. And people can see it after the fact.
Oh, perfect. That's wonderful. I mean, because I love Vox. I really do.
Oh, Vox makes it so easy to blog. Absolutely.
They make it so easy. I do a weekly service or a weekly sermon, a message, a class, whatever it is.
That's
and
so great.
As soon as I'm done, I just port it over, you know, make it sound pretty through Audacity, upload it, and within a half an hour, it's posted and ready to go, and then I send out my emails.
Rich, I'm so impressed. You're a modern pastor. SacredEnergy.ca. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number, 888-827-5536. Some great responses via email on a couple of the questions we've talked about. I mentioned that American Express was honoring their price protection plan on the iPhone, and SS5, I guess that's his name, sent me an email with a link to the actual contract that you have with American Express saying they don't, in fact, cover cell phones. However, according to Gizmodo, American Express has been covering it. They say, well, we don't technically, but we want to do this for our customers. So some pretty goodwill there. I mean, here's a corporation saying, we can capitalize on this. So since we're all within that 90 days, since the phone didn't come out but 2 months ago, you can call American Express. Apparently, according to Gizmodo, if you say, I'm asking about the iPhone price guarantee, they'll refund your money. I like that. Now, here's a question, and Apple hasn't said how it's going to do its $100 credit. I wonder if you could still get the store credit. Now, that'd be going too far. Let's not be greedy here. Let's just be happy. Also, Phil Baker and a number of others have suggested Grand Central, as I mentioned. Now, unfortunately, Grand Central, which is a Google company now, is invitation only, but you can apply for an invitation to their beta program. They're a centralized phone service where you get a phone number, and then you can manipulate in all sorts of ways, including having it forward to your other phones. So as a way of blocking calls, you can have Grand Central do that. But as I mentioned earlier, you're going to have to change your phone number. You got to tell everybody, well, I have a different number. The advantage of doing that, though, is you stick with that Grand Central number. You could change cell phones, change phones. Doesn't matter. Everybody just calls that Grand Central number. And Alexander says that AT&T will let you block. Well, now, wait a minute. He says you block outgoing caller ID. So that's not going to solve it. That's not. I guess he didn't understand what we were talking about. We're talking about incoming calls, not outgoing calls. So, yeah, I knew you could block your caller ID, which, by the way, makes it hard to block people. What I've done on some phones is just say, if it doesn't have a caller ID, I don't want to hear from them. But that does eliminate an awful lot of people. I like caller ID, but people are concerned, I guess, about the privacy issue. John Pasadena, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, John.
Hey, good morning, Leo.
Good morning.
I was thinking, if you ever stop doing this radio show, we might as well all unplug our computers.
Not so. Not so. But thank you for the kind words. I appreciate it.
You've helped me before, so I thought I'd give you a call. I was looking for your expert advice on which programs I can use to edit text and place pre-recorded video on my website that I'm using to promote my book.
So you want to make video.
Yeah.
And you want to put it on your website so people
right.
can go to the website, press play, and just watch it.
Right. Watch little clips of things.
It's a great idea. Very easy to do now, too. Again, this is thanks to Flash. In the past, there have been all sorts of... It's been problematic. In fact, we're going to talk tomorrow with Callie Lewis about different video formats. It's very difficult if you want to put video on the web because there's dozens of different formats and not everybody can see all of them. But Flash has kind of solved that. I think 90% or more of all computers have Flash because it just comes with a computer. So when you go to YouTube, and because of YouTube and sites like Google Video, everybody's got a Flash now. So when you go to YouTube or Google Video, that's what you're watching is Flash. And it's very easy. Now, one thing you could do is upload to Google Video or YouTube.
Uh-huh.
And they'll give you an embed code, which you could then put on your website.
Okay.
There are a lot of sites, and that's free, and there are a lot of sites that'll do that. I use another site, although there's no reason not to use Google or YouTube, but I use a site called Video Egg. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I just find it easier to do, but because it allows you to create a library of videos, and it gives you a lot of capabilities. So videoegg.com.
Okay.
And then you'll download a little Video Egg client. Mm-hmm. Create your video. You can use a video camera or whatever. Create it.
Right.
Put it as long as it's, you know, and it understands almost every format, AVI, QuickTime, pretty much every format you could create.
Mm-hmm.
And then you use this client to upload it to Video Egg. It'll become part of your library. And then you click a button that says, where do you want to put this? On your blog, on your website? And it'll give you the code that it's HTML code. You just cut and paste.
So people that if they wanted to listen to excerpts from the book or something,
it'd be right on your site.
Oh.
They wouldn't even have to leave your site. So they go to do you have a site?
Yes.
Yeah, perfect. So they go to your site and they actually see it as an embedded video on their on the site with a picture of you. And you can say, you know, click, press play to hear me read chapter 4.
I see. So it could be various sections of the book.
You bet. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So that Video Egg.
Yeah, there's a lot of sites that do. I happen to like Video Egg because it's easier from the point of view of the publisher. It's not as public. You know, the problem with YouTube and Google Video is they're public on YouTube and Google as well.
Uh-huh.
With Video Egg, you can say, no, it's only visible on my site.
I see, because it used to be when you see video, it took forever to download. Now you go to certain sites and I'm not...
Yeah.
And it's click and it's coming up.
Yep.
Okay.
And that's exactly what all, and it's because of Flash. Thank you, Flash.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it very easy. So if you go, I'll give you an example of you know, I have, if you go to my blog, one of my blogs is a Tumblelog, Tumbleleo, TumbleLeo.com. You'll see a lot of embedded video on there, some from YouTube, a lot of it from YouTube, but some from other sources. I think I even have some Video Egg video if you keep going, but you'll see in every case, it's got an image.
Right.
You press the play button and you see it and you play it and you listen to it. So
yeah.
There are a number of sites that do this. But again, Video Egg doesn't make it public. They give you some control. You don't have that YouTube ad in there, which I think, you know, in a way it makes it look a little classier. It does say Video Egg on it. Let me see if I can find a page where I have some Video Egg. Somewhere on my site I have some embedded and you can see it.
Mm-hmm.
Kite is another site that does that. And I've used Kite, K-Y-T-E. But Video Egg is my favorite. KYTE.com is another site that lets you do that. There's a million of these. They're all free. They're all trying to get in on this revolution, basically. They're all saying, oh, videos, you know, they look at how much YouTube got, 1.6 billion, although by the time the Google stock went up to, it was worth 2 billion. And they say, wow, how do I get on that gravy train? So there's dozens of sites. Video Egg's done by some great guys I really like, and I just think they do a good job. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. More calls to come. We'll be right back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number if you'd like to talk. 888-827-5536. 8888-ASK-LEO. Got the chat room open. Well, you got all sorts of ways to participate at irc.dslextreme. The website is techguylabs.com. Dale will be doing the show notes, I believe, this hour. We're just try out some different show note folk. And as I said, we are working on a new site. It will be up soon. I want to do a little tweaking to it. This web stuff is complicated. It's not easy, let me tell you. And, of course, the show notes are at techguylabs.com. I forgot to call Scott Wilkinson last hour, our video guy. So we'll do him this hour. I don't know what I was thinking. I got distracted. Scott Wilkinson will talk about high-def TV and all that stuff in just about half an hour on the show. So I apologize for people tuning in for that. Did you see that the bees... Apparently, the bees are not being chased away by cell phones. There was some concern. Bee colonies are dying out or disappearing. And somebody came up with a theory that it was the cell phones that were doing it. I don't know why they thought that. It turns out it's a virus that apparently is coming from down under. At least that's the latest thinking. So you don't have to worry about your cell phone causing a problem with your honey. Unless your honey happens to be your wife or husband. That's another matter entirely. Let's go to Aaron on line 3. Aaron is calling from Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hi, Aaron. Welcome. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, I pushed the wrong button. I got these little numbers. Hi, Aaron. Now you're on. Welcome, Aaron. Are you there? Have I pressed the right button this time? I have. Aaron. Hello. All right. Well, let me put you on hold, Aaron. We'll get back to you in a second. Now, let's go back to Jacob I was talking to a second ago in Ashland, Oregon. Hello, Jacob. How are you today?
Good. How are you, Leo?
I'm great. Love that area. You live in a beautiful part of the country.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
So, on episode 381, which was the 25th,
yes.
You were saying that it would be great if you didn't have to answer all the emails and that there was a forum for people to post their questions if they couldn't get on the radio show.
That's a great idea. You know, I have, right now, I'm just looking at my email, 4,675 unread messages. So I've got quite a bit of mail to go through here.
So I made one for you.
You did? What'd you make?
It's LeoLaporteFans.com.
All right. Let me check it out. What is it?
It's, well, I was hoping it would be for if you didn't get on the radio.
What a good idea. You could go there and participate. I think, I mean, I appreciate that. I think that's wonderful. I think probably what we're going to do, and I think I mentioned this, but maybe not. Maybe I wasn't clear about it, is make a part of the Tech Guy site be a forum where I could then in my email response to people say, I don't have time to answer your question on personally, but if you would just go to the forum and ask it, that's ultimately what we're going to do, and we'll probably make it part of the Tech Guy site. I've been talking with Sasha about that, and I don't know how quickly we'll be able to do that, but hey, this is great. So do you have a forum in here? What is
If you click on get free tech support, that's a forum.
Look at that. You're good. Look at that. You got that up right away. What software are you using for this forum?
PHPBB.
Great. Well, I certainly, and you've got already quite a few posts, it looks like, in there. So that's great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's tell people, LeoLaporteFans.com. That's great. I thank you for your work. It's an unofficial site.
Unlimited local and long distance calling for less than $20 a month. Call 888-6-
That wasn't me. It's an unofficial site, but I think we'll, but absolutely, I'm glad to give out a plug, and I really appreciate all your work. Thank you, Jacob.
Sure.
That's great. What grade are you in? Are you in high school?
I am in eighth grade.
That's amazing. And do you have other sites that you do as well?
This is my main site.
Hey, that's really nicely done. Is this the first time you've done something like this?
No, I mean, I do my school sites, but yeah.
Is this something you'd like to do when you get out of school?
Yeah.
I was going to say when you grow up, but I don't want to insult you. When you become a working adult, how about that? And what would you like to do? Would you like to be a webmaster, an IT guy, a programmer, game designer? What do you think specifically is going to float your boat?
Most likely IT.
Yeah, it's exciting, isn't it? It's fun.
Yeah.
I think about, you know, well of course, when I was your age, the highest tech thing I ever did was set the timer on the fry machine at McDonald's, but we didn't have personal computers back then. We didn't have forums. But when I was in my mid-20s, back in 1984, about 20, no, was that 23 years ago, I set up a BBS system. You don't remember those, but before the internet, people would dial in to a BBS system online. You had a FidoNet system. And it was very similar. It was the same idea. It was a place for people to get together. You know, the problem was I only had two lines, so only two people could do it at once. The internet's really changed all this. But essentially, the way forums are is really a kind of a replication of how these BBS systems were. And I tell you, it was so much fun then, and I can just imagine what it's like for kids today. What a great environment. What a great opportunity. Jim, thank you very much, Jacob. I appreciate your effort. Jim in Palmdale, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jim.
And Leo, a big pleasure talking with you. And for my birthday, I couldn't think of anything better to do than to call Leo to solve a problem.
Happy birthday!
Thank you, sir.
I would sing the happy birthday song to you, but I don't want to pay AOL any money. Did you know that Time Warner owns the rights to Happy Birthday to You? And when they play it in a movie, in fact, I just saw a movie the other day and they sang For He's a Jolly Good Fellow, clearly too cheap to pay the fees to Time Warner for Happy Birthday to You.
Well, you know, maybe as with their email program, they'll eventually make it.
Maybe they'll make money someday. Jeez. What can I do for you?
Well, Leo, courtesy of Leo Laporte and Tech TV and all this good stuff, you have brought me out of web TV world.
Ah, you're getting part, joining the PC revolution, huh?
And it started with DSL Extreme, of course, at your recommendation. Okay. And I went out and I got an Acer, I think it was an E380, about 3 months ago. And my focus actually gets around a free trial version of Norton that apparently they activated before they gave it to me.
Yeah, isn't that nice? Isn't that generous of them?
We're trying to help, but, you know, like I said, I came from web TV world, so I didn't know any better.
Yeah, you know, and I tell you, I just got a gateway computer. It comes with McAfee, and it's, you know, the first thing when you turn it on, it says, well, you need to install this, and I said no, and it's still installed anyway, and, you know, I understand why. They're trying to protect the novice.
Right.
But you know better because you've been listening.
Right. So what can I say? You know, when you listen to Leo, it goes right. That's all there is to it.
Oh,
so,
thank you. I hope that's the case.
I'm coming to the end. I'm actually, this kind of surprised me with Norton. I'm constantly and getting practice with this and phasing out of web TV. Using Steve Gibson's GRC site and checking shields up, et cetera. And all of a sudden, I noticed that it constantly has been saying, you know, system secure, and stealth, etc. But now it got down to the 7 days left syndrome,
right,
here.
Right.
And it forcibly leaves open my, I believe it's my number 80 and number 340 or 440.
It's 443.
Yeah, until I renew the Norton
subscription. That's okay. 443 and 80 are the, this is sneaky of them. They're scaring you, aren't they?
Well, they initially rocked my world because previously when maybe a tracking cookie or something somehow got in there.
Right. Oh, you have a tracking cookie. Everybody has tracking cookies on their site.
Right.
This is the way they have of scaring you. And port 80 is the web port. Port 443 is the secure HTTPS port. Those are always open on all systems or you wouldn't be able to surf.
Well, I used to be able to go right-click it, and then it would go back to stealth mode. Well, suddenly, when I got down to the 7-day notice that Norton is going to expire, they apparently lock it, and I believe it's being used as a scare tactic because I double-checked with Windows Defender, everything else, and it's showing everything.
You're fine. Uninstall that piece.
Fine.
Yeah, uninstall
so
it.
follow up with, I wanted to go get non-32 because you recommend it, and I want to do that when this Norton expires. But do I need to just allow this trial version to expire, and then it will just automatically shut down, or do I actually...
No, it'll bug you for the rest of your life. You actually have to uninstall it.
That's what I had a feeling, so I thought I'd call Leo and figure out what I got to do.
You have a disk probably with the Norton security on it. It'll be a yellow disk. Run that and remove it. If you have trouble removing it, Symantec, because it knows how hard it is to uninstall it, if you Google Symantec Norton uninstall, they have an additional program you can download that does an even better job of getting rid of it. There's a Norton removal tool. To defend them, the reason they make it so hard to uninstall Norton is because they don't want a virus or a spyware to do that, right? I mean, it makes sense. It's not like they're trying to make money or anything. But you do want to get rid of it. And you know what? Let's take a little break. When we come back, I want to tell you what you should do instead. Leo Laborde, the tech guy. Laborde, the tech guy, 8888-ASK-LEO. We're talking about tech, and it's our weekly How to Secure Yourself segment, because we've got to do this once a week, because it really, frankly, is probably the single most important thing you need to understand when it comes to computers anyway. And, you know, I know it's a little repetitious, but please bear with us, because I think we got to talk about it. Jim in Palmdale has a new computer, came with Norton pre-installed. Norton's about to expire. He's wondering, now what? And you know I'm no fan of Norton, but I just got an email from Symantec. Says, is there anything we can do to make you like Norton? Yeah, I mean, look, in fact, if you look at Norton, the antivirus, particularly the corporate version of Norton antivirus, it's a very good antivirus. You could make it so it didn't bloat the computer so much with all these other things running in the background. You make it so it doesn't scare people, as Jim was scared by spurious warnings. Less intrusive, be a little less greedy, I guess I would say to Symantec. It took a very good brand. Norton Antivirus was it, as far as I was concerned. And they've made everybody hate it. The only people who still use Norton and McAfee are people who don't know any better. Right, Jim?
I just look at it, Leo, that my big complaint with it was that it's
intrusive.
AMD 64 dual core, and believe it or not, after the Norton seemingly was activated, I swear, Leo, that my web TV is faster than the computer.
Yeah, that's probably true. In fact, my benchmarks have shown that Norton, in fact, not just mine, PC Magazine and others have shown that Norton, when all that stuff's running in the background, will slow your computer down 10, 15, 20%. I mean, a significant amount, noticeably. Now, one thing I recommend is, the things about Norton you don't want are the things that run in the background, which means the Norton system works, the tool, you know, the Norton system doctor, all that stuff, but also turn off email scanning. Now, when I say that, it makes me nervous because email scanning is very useful for people who have bad habits. But Jim, you're a smart guy, and I'm gonna teach you really the most important thing to understand, which is that no software will protect you if you have bad habits. The key to security is knowing what not to do online. That's really the bottom line, because software nowadays is behind the curve. It can't keep up with all of these bad programs. And if the user does dumb things, dumb is not the right word, uninformed things, risky things, the software is not going to be able to back them up. So really, these programs are almost second line of defense, and they aren't always effective if the user is not savvy. Now, unfortunately, there are a lot of savvy users, so it's better than nothing, and that's why when you buy a new computer, almost always it, you know, automatically turns on all this stuff. But every security expert I don't know any security expert that routinely runs this stuff in the background, unless they're testing it. So let me tell you what behaviors you need to understand, avoid, and understanding that'll get you 90% of the way. I use Nod 32, but I don't run it in the background because it's slow. You know, it actually doesn't slow your system down. I just don't want anything running in the background. I scan once a week. The key is changing what you do. All right, I'm going to put you on hold here so the phone won't bug me, but this is the key. Changing your behavior, and it's really very simple. Don't open attachments in email. That's the number one vector for viruses. Now, there's a virus, the storm virus that's going around right now that they're smart enough not to put attachments in the email. See, and you know, these virus authors are out there to kind of get around your vigilance, so they're going to try new techniques. So number one is attachments. And a lot of viruses have been spread around that way in the last couple of years. They spread very quickly. What happens is there's a virus in that attachment. You'll open it. It'll go through your address book and immediately send out emails to everybody in your address book from you saying, hey, here's that spreadsheet you wanted, or here's that presentation we were talking about, or hey, here's some cool pictures of Anna Kournikova, or whatever the virus author thinks is most likely to get you to open that attachment. And it'll go to all your friends and they'll open it and they'll be mad at you. So don't open attachments. And then the storm worm doesn't use attachments. It uses a link in the email that sends you to a malicious website. So the second thing to do is not click links in emails. And there are really a couple of good reasons not to do this. Not just because it could send you to a malicious website that can infect you, but because that's how phishing scams work also. You'll get an email from your bank, a panic email from your bank saying somebody's been accessing your account from China. Do you know anybody from China? If not, you better quickly log into your bank and change some things or verify your account or whatever. Anything that's going to scare you, it looks very real. It has a link to, you know, bankofamerica.com right in the email. You could see it. It looks good. http://bankofamerica.com or citibank.com or whatever your bank's name is. What's wrong with that? You click that, it's going to bring you there. In fact, you're right, because when the browser opens, there it is, the Bank of America site, the Citibank site. You open it up. You give them your password and your login, you're dead. Because it isn't your bank's site. It's a hacker. So don't click links on email. If you think you need to go to a site that's linked in email, copy the site, drag your mouse over, copy and paste it in the browser, or type it by hand in the browser. That's safe. But don't click links in email. Make sure you update your Windows regularly or any operating system. When there are critical updates, make sure you apply them immediately. That'll also help protect you against things like this stormworm, because they take advantages of flaws in Windows that are constantly being patched. Make sure you apply those patches. Don't download software from the internet. And in fact, a lot of people get this stuff from sharing music because you think it's a music file on LimeWire and you download it and boom, it's not. So be very careful what you download. Use a safe browser, Internet Explorer 7 on Vista with protection turned on, or Firefox. Do those things, you'll be safe. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Unlimited local and long distance calling for less than $20 a month. Call 888-60-POWER. That's 888-60-POWER. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy from the Tech Guy Labs. Back to the phones in just a moment at 888-88-ASK-LEO. But let's check in right now with Scott Wilkinson. He is the video guy, home theater expert from the Perfect Vision magazine at avguide.com. He's also, and we've kind of briefly touched on this, a professional musician as well. Hey, Scott, good to talk to you again.
Hey, Leo. Oh, always a pleasure.
So, I thought we'd ask a little bit more about your musical background. Were you a musician first?
I was. I've been a professional musician far longer than I've been a journalist.
Interesting.
I think my first paying gig was in high school. I played in the pit orchestra of a musical in my hometown. But I've been a musician for as long as I can remember. Both my parents are musicians, professional musicians. Nice. So it came pretty naturally.
It's unusual because I think a lot of times musicians don't like to review audio gear because it can't live up to the live experience they're used to.
Well, that's true. And many of my colleagues initially expressed surprise that I'm not an audiophile. I don't consider myself an audiophile. And then I tell them I'm a professional musician and they say, oh, well, that explains it. Certainly, I like good quality reproduced audio. In my home recording studio, I have a very nice audio system, but and I have a nice audio system in my home theater as well, but I don't feel like it's necessary to spend many thousands of dollars on speakers and many more thousands of dollars on preamplifiers and so on and so forth. A good AV receiver does me just fine.
Yeah. Interesting. So yeah. That's why you review video, not audio, even though...
Interestingly enough, that's what I'm doing now. But for 10 years, I was the technical editor of a magazine called Electronic Musician, which was devoted strictly to audio. And I reviewed synthesizers, mostly synthesizers, and so on like that, for professional musicians and semi-pros as well, what we sometimes called weekend warriors. You know, the person who has a regular job, day job during the week, but on the weekends they have a garage band or they might go out and play clubs or something like that. And they might have a home recording studio, which is really more of the area that I focused on when I was there. I still write a column for Electronic Musician called Tech Page, which is basically a little one-page glimpse at future technologies that might become important to electronic musicians, new types of speakers or new types of microphones or new types of processing and memory storage that would be much greater capacity than what musicians use today.
Yeah.
So that sort of thing.
What kind of music do you play most of the time?
Well, my primary modern instruments include the trombone, tuba, and euphonium, which is a small tuba.
If you had asked me, I said, oh, maybe keyboard. You play the tuba.
I play the tuba. And this is an interesting thing.
I'm sorry. You must have gotten this your whole life. It's kind of a comic instrument.
It is a comic instrument, yes, it's true, no question about it.
I apologize.
I'm perfectly happy to be the comic relief instrument, actually.
How did you choose tuba?
Well, I started on trumpet, and then...
It was just too small for you.
It was, yes. Well, it was too much competition. Everybody wanted to play first trumpet.
Right.
And whereas in the tubas, everybody played the same part. There was no competition, and I just didn't like all that competition, so I migrated downward.
Is it kind of the base of the wind instruments? I mean,
of the brasses,
the brass,
yes.
Yeah.
The brass instruments, it is the base.
And is the euphonium a little higher?
It is. It is. Okay. It's a little higher. It's a tenor range instrument, whereas the tuba is a bass range instrument. But they're really the same, just different sizes.
Does a euphonium sound more like a French horn then? Or?
No, I would call it more like a flugelhorn, possibly.
Okay. Oh, that's a beautiful sound.
A beautiful, mellow, mellow sound. In fact, euphonium. Euphonium.
It's euphonious.
Right. It derives from the Greek pleasant sounding.
That's neat.
So,
do you play classical music or do you play polkas? What do you play?
I'll play anything you put in front of me. No, I do play classical music and I play jazz quite a lot. I also specialize in Baroque and Renaissance music.
Oh, now so you're playing the sack butt.
I'm playing the sack butt, exactly right, which is the Renaissance trombone.
I love that sound.
I played at the Renaissance Fair up there in Northern California and also down here in Southern California. I also play a lot of ethnic wind instruments like wooden flutes and clay ocarinas, seashell trumpets and didgeridoo and so on. I have a trio that I play a lot of these weirdo instruments in. The trio is called Many Axes, and the name comes from the fact that musician slang for instrument is axe. You know, hey, did you bring your axe?
Right.
And so we all play many, many different axes.
Oh, how interesting.
And you can find that. Our website there is artawakening.com/many axes.
And so you've played also on music on soundtracks?
I have. I played seashell trumpet on the soundtrack to White Squall and Gladiator, the Ridley Scott film.
Now, what does a seashell trumpet sound like?
Imagine on the South Pacific Island, you've got the guy standing up there, and he's got this big old seashell, and he puts it to his mouth, and he goes, ooh.
It's like a conch.
It's like a conch. It's exactly right. That's right. A conch.
But is it an actual, brass instrument, or?
In a sense, you basically cut off the end of it, and it forms a little mouthpiece, kind of like a brass instrument. All you just buzz into it like a trumpet, and it makes a sound like that.
That wasn't you in the Ricola ads, was it?
No. Although I did, that instrument is called an Alphorn or an Alpenhorn, and I did play that instrument on the soundtrack of Gladiator.
I'll be darned.
Hans Zimmer was the composer on that film, and he wanted a lot of really rude-sounding, brassy right. kind of sounds.
Right.
And so he layered me playing Alp horn and didgeridoo and Tibetan temple horn.
Oh, wow. Breathing must be incredible.
Well, I have to have a pretty good lung capacity, that's
yeah,
for sure.
Especially for the didgeridoo. I mean, do you have to do circular breathing to play that?
That's one of the techniques to use, yes. And I must admit, I have a difficult time with that. One of the other members of Many Axes does a much better job of that particular technique.
Because it's almost a constant sound that's coming out of
it. This woman can play as the same note unbroken for hours at a time.
A lot of use that is.
Well, it's actually more interesting than you might think because she varies the tone and the timbre from a very deep, rich sound to a kind of a more buzzy sound. And she sings at the same time as she's playing. It's really quite remarkable.
Okay, do you ever perform in public? I mean, is there a way we can hear your work? I'd like to come hear you.
Well, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I'm coming. There's a concert coming up. The Jewish New Year is coming up.
Yes.
And, every year, my wife and I direct a Yiddish chorus for an organization called the Sholem Community, which is, believe it or not, a secular Jewish organization. Hmm. With much more focus and emphasis on cultural and social issues, much less emphasis on religious issues.
But celebrating the tradition of
yes,
of
exactly.
The culture, yeah.
One of the traditions that we celebrate that I perform is I blow the shofar.
Oh, wow.
The ram's horn
right.
trumpet.
Right.
Which has a 6,000-7,000 year history. And it's a very traditional for this time of year. So the chorus sings, which I conduct. There's an instrumental ensemble with great professional players, some of which are in the L.A. Philharmonic. And I blow the shofar, which is a very traditional thing to do. It's a moving, meaningful event that without the religious trappings. And this year it is on Friday, September 21st at 7 p.m. at Hamilton High School. 2955 South Robertson Boulevard, Los Angeles, California.
I'd like to hear that. If I can get down there, I'd love to come.
It's quite a remarkable performance.
Wow.
Well worth the trip. And unlike most temples, which cost several hundred dollars to go to their high holiday service, this time of year is called, this is more like $20, $30, $40, something like
that. Nice.
So it's
much
better than most temples.
That's really cool. I'm really glad that, Scott, we could... talk a little bit about your background in music. Scott, of course, is as a music expert. It's kind of an unusual person to be the video expert, but he does both and does it regularly on the show. So I thought it would be fun to kind of find out a little bit more about him. You can catch Scott's work as video editor for the Perfect Vision magazine on the newsstands, of course, or at avguide.com. Now we got Aaron back on the line. I'm sorry about that, Aaron. Welcome, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Aaron.
Yes.
There we go. How you doing?
Hold on one second. Let me get him. He just left the phone.
Oh, dear. That was the... I'll tell you what. I'm going to put you on hold. That was the wrong Aaron anyway. Oh, I just hung up on him. Let's get Aaron in Ann Arbor, Michigan. That's the Aaron I wanted. Hey, Aaron.
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm great. Sorry about hanging up on you. Let me get you on the air here now, all right?
All right.
What can I do for you?
I'm actually on my way home from vacation right now, and about three quarters of the way through our trip, I formatted the SD card in my digital camera and all my pictures.
Oh, how frustrating.
So I haven't used it since
Good.
Then. I had a smaller card that I've been using. I think that there's probably I found a bunch of software on Windows. However, I've got my laptop dual booting into Ubuntu and Windows, and Windows won't read the SD card. It won't recognize it.
How did you format it? In the camera or with Ubuntu?
Yeah, in the camera.
Oh, that's fine.
No, in the camera.
Yeah.
And so in Ubuntu, they're Windows formatted. I mean, they're Windows files. I can't remember what they're called, but... they're in Windows format.
Let me recommend a solution for you. You're right in that when you format a drive, it doesn't, depending on the format, I'm not sure what the camera does, but normally it doesn't delete the files. It only deletes the table of contents, in effect, and starts over. So you won't see any files, but the data is still there on the drive, and that's what you want.
Okay.
So you need essentially an unerase program. There's a free one that I recommend. It works it's intended for camera cards. It's called Smart Recover. It's from PCInspector.de. PCInspector.de. And it's absolutely free, which is nice. It's called Smart Recovery. So, again, you're right. Don't touch that card. Don't do anything to that card, because anything you do to that card will delete data now. So just you should, even if you can't see it, you should be able to run this program on it and recover it. It is not a Linux program. It's a Windows program.
Okay, so even if I don't need to pull up the card in Windows then?
Well, I don't know why it wouldn't mount in Windows. I think when you get home, it should mount in Windows. It should mount no problem, as long as you formatted it in the camera. If you formatted it with Linux, Windows won't read a Linux format, but...
Right, no, but I can look at the files in Ubuntu, and they're in Windows format, so it doesn't make sense why it wouldn't.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what's going on. Maybe don't use that card reader. Use the camera via USB. But you do need a tool that understands Windows formatting at PCInspector.de. It's free. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Let's get back to Aaron in Falling Waters, West Virginia. Thanks, Aaron. Was that your wife holding on for you?
Yeah, it was.
That was very nice of her. I appreciate it.
I tried to get on the tech show for a minute, go to the bathroom, and I hand the phone to a not so happy wife.
It makes sense, of course, that the minute you go to the bathroom, that's when I'd pick up the phone.
Of course.
Yeah.
Well, I've been a long-time listener. Actually, listened to you way back in the CDTV days before it was tech.
That's great.
And glad to finally talk to you.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling. We went out in those days back in the Tech TV days to Charleston, West Virginia. Did you come by and say hi when we were there?
Yeah. Actually, used to live in the Baltimore area, and you're there.
Oh, yeah.
At one point, the CompUSA, but I never did get out to you.
We're up in Baltimore, as they say.
Yeah, Baltimore.
Well, what can I do for you, Aaron?
Well, I have a question about calendar synchronization.
Mm-hmm.
I have an iMac at home. I have an XP machine at work, and I use a Palm Trio. What I would like to do is try to be able to synchronize the calendars between all of them.
Have them all match.
Except for, like, work. I only want part of just my work stuff at work.
So what you need to decide is what the master calendar is.
My home calendar.
Okay. And then you also need to make sure that when you sync up your Palm, that you only sync to the same device each time.
Yeah.
Because the real issue with doing all of these different devices is that you can get duplicates and mess, you know, overwrite each other, get out of sync. And so that could be a problem. So there's one Mac, one PC, work, and a Palm. Is that right?
Yep. And the Palm is on the Mac.
Okay.
And the
main calendar is the Mac calendar.
That is correct, and I'm kind of halfway there. I have a Plaxo account on my Mac.
Yeah, I use Plaxo 3. Actually, does a very good job of syncing not just your address book, which it was famous for, but the new 3 also syncs your calendars and works with all of those devices. Has that worked for you?
Yeah, I've been doing it with addresses. I mean,
well, try the new Plaxo 3 calendar syncing.
Yeah, it's just trying to figure out how to get the get the work calendar over from a separate Plaxo account over to my Plaxo account for my home stuff.
Oh, so you have a Plaxo account for work and a Plaxo account for home.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if I should. Maybe I was thinking maybe Gmail, like synchronize each one to Gmail and then share through Gmail.
How is work getting synchronized?
Just Plaxo that I have with Outlook.
But it's a separate Plaxo account. So that means that there's really no communication now between your work calendar and everybody else.
I could always swap it out, but I wasn't sure if Plaxo handles only synchronizes just one account.
If you've paid for the full Plaxo, I think that's probably the solution. I mean, it's not necessarily one I'd recommend to everybody, but since you've already got it,
yeah, like there's other that I could try.
Yeah, there are a number of other ones. The way I do it is I use Google Calendar, and I have a Mac and I have Windows. And I have many devices, and I've started using a new program for the Mac called Spanning Sync. You could try before you buy. It'll sync it both ways from Google Calendar to your iCal and back and forth. And now all we need to do is sync the Google Calendar with Windows. And there are a number of ways to do that. I actually haven't tried any of them, but you can even sync. Now, Plaxo's Google Calendar sync seems to be a little odd right now. I don't know if they've fixed that or not. But you could even use Plaxo, not on your Mac, but just on your Windows machine and your work machine, and sync up to that if you've got Plaxo Pro, sync to your Google Calendar.
Okay. Yeah.
There are a lot of ways to do this. And then if you've got your Palm syncing to your Mac, you're fine because your Mac is your master, right?
Yes, that's correct.
All right. So your Palm is going to be fine. The Mac is going to be fine. I use, obviously, .Mac with all of my Macs. The trick really is crossing that bridge from Mac to Windows. Plaxo will do it. Yahoo Calendar actually has a very good Windows sync. And I think Plaxo is probably going to be your best choice. The nice thing about Plaxo is it will sync your calendar and address book up to Yahoo, up to Google, up to everything pretty much. And it seems to do a good job. I love the dedupe feature of the address book.
Mm-hmm.
My experience with the calendar syncing has been pretty good.
And it will actually do just certain.
Yeah, what you do is you do it by category. Exactly.
Because I only want my work stuff to be going back and forth, and I don't want my personal stuff showing up on my work computer.
Yes, understand.
And cut the tether, and they won't have any of my information.
Understand. So there is and I haven't tried it again, but there's an open source calendar synchronization tool. It's Java for GCal and say Outlook and other things. It's called GCal Daemon, GCALDAEMON.sourceforge.net. And that might be one thing to look at. Frankly, since you've got Plaxo, I think you're really there. I think you just need to investigate more of the Plaxo 3 features because it'll do all of that.
Yeah, I'm doing Plaxo 3, the free version right now. But
you haven't paid for it. Okay. So, yeah, once you pay for it, you'll see you can sync all of those devices.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, be the man to ask.
Yeah, in fact, I've been very impressed. Plaxo got a really bad rap, understandably, because people were using it to spam all the people in their address book saying, I have Plaxo. Would you get Plaxo so you can keep me up to date? And I actually talked to the CEO of Plaxo, and he was very apologetic. He said, you know, we were trying to build a large enough, you know, a group of people. They call it the network effect. If you have enough subscribers using Plaxo, then it's really useful for everybody. And we're trying to build it up quickly, and that was a mistake. And they've really backed off on that. And now I think with Plaxo 3, they've got a very good service. You know who's doing that right now? It's driving me crazy. Is Ketchup. Have you received Ketchup spam yet? Do not join this site. QUECHUP.com. Do not join this site. It's a social networking platform. They say it's sweeping the globe, and I'll tell you why. Because automatically, without asking you, they go into your address book and they send a copy of the invitation to everybody you know. And I'm starting to get it from all my friends. Do not, whatever you do, do not use Ketchup. We really should, as a group, avoid sites like this because we don't want to encourage this kind of, you know, spam. And that always makes me a little nervous when you give this kind of personal information to a company like Plaxo or Ketchup, because you've got to really trust them. You're giving them something. When somebody gives my email address to a company, they're giving something of great value to me away without asking me. And so you've got to be really careful about what happens to this information. I think Plaxo's turned it around, though. I really do. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Laporte, the tech guy. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. 888-827-5536. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. If you want to talk about technology. I'm surprised. I thought maybe I'd get a few people complaining about Apple and the iPhone. You know, Steve Jobs, when he announced the plan to give back $100 store credit to everybody who'd bought the iPhone at the higher $600 price, said he'd received, quote, hundreds of emails. Could it be that the media is blowing the reaction out of proportion? No, you think? People I've talked to are pretty, you know, sanguine about it. They go, well, you know, that's the way it is in technology. Who hasn't bought a computer that dropped in price the next day? Or a monitor, or a printer, or a cell phone? It's very common. I think you could say, well, a $200 price drop in 2 months, that's pretty fast. And I would agree, but I think people are kind of used to that idea. And I think at $400, the iPhone is a much more compelling purchase. You know, I'm going, rats, I wish I'd bought one 2 months later. Of course. But I said rats the day after I bought one because I didn't have to wait in line. It turned out I could have just walked into a store the next day. I've been saying a lot of rats. I say rats all the time. I bought an iPod 2 months ago. Rats. A 60-gig iPod I could have gotten for the same price. A better iPod with a 160-gig hard drive if I'd waited 2 months. Do I go to Apple saying, where's my refund? No, that's the way it is in technology. That's the way it is in a lot of things. That's life. And I have a feeling that most people who bought those iPhones feel that way. But I think the media loves this. And I think Steve Jobs has kind of had his hand forced. I should warn you, if you are looking at the 160-gig iPod, remember, people forget this, that you need to reserve as much hard drive space as you plan to put on the iPod. I mean, you don't have to. You could copy songs on by hand, but most people want to sync with iTunes. And if you want to sync with iTunes, you've got to reserve 160 gigs. Do you have that much free space? This is for the real enthusiast who has a huge music collection. They've got it all on a big hard drive, and they're willing to do that. And in that case, boy, I mean, the idea of having something in your pocket with 160 gigs of worth of songs, that's amazing. Let me get my calculator out here. It's about a megabyte per minute of music or audio, right? So 160,000 minutes. Is that right? On one of those iPods. That's 2,666 hours without repeating. That's 111 days without repeating. That's a lot of music. You put it on shuffle and 111 days later it repeats. David Pogue of the New York Times was very upset. He said, $100, that's not enough. It should be $200. Is it just me? What do you think? Am I asking too much? 8888 asks Leo, is David asking too much? Am I giving Apple too much credit? Am I just rolling over? To me, it seems pretty generous. They're even giving a $100 store refund. I hope that doesn't establish a precedent. Well, actually, as a user, I do hope it establishes a precedent, but I don't know if that's really reasonable. The nature of technology is that stuff gets faster and cheaper. You get more bang for your buck, and it happens almost weekly. And I think that's pretty amazing. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, is there? 8888, ask Leo. Let's talk about it. Steve's on the line from Los Angeles. Hey, Steve.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you today?
Good, thanks. Good. I recently purchased an HP Pavilion laptop, the small 12-inch screen, very portable. And I travel quite a bit to Latin American countries where at the hotels they have internet access, but typically you have to go into a general area either in the lobby or near the pool in order to access the internet.
Right.
And I'm wondering, is there any device that I can add on to my computer that will pick up the signal, let's say, from an upper story room or from actually my hotel room?
Oh, that's interesting. So they don't have wired internet in the room at all? They don't have any internet in the room. You have to go to the public areas to get it.
Yeah. you have to go to the public areas, and it's unsecured, you know, almost as if you're going online in your own home, but you have to use it in their public area.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, there absolutely are little adapters and antennas and things you can put on your system. Radio Labs, which does a lot of these extenders, radiolabs.com, they actually make a notebook extender. It's $100. Has an antenna that goes off of it. And the antenna is what makes the difference, you understand. It's increasing the gain.
Right. It says the Senio card and Radio Labs notebook antenna kit.
You got it. That's the one.
Okay.
That's going to do about as much as you can do. Whether it'll be enough to get down to the lobby in Dubai, I don't know.
Gotcha. I haven't been to Dubai yet. Is there any difference with one that says it's an actual plug-in amplifier from just an antenna?
Yes, that's a very good question. So an antenna increases gain passively. It's a better receiver.
Okay.
And frankly, having an external antenna on a laptop does make a big difference. That laptop has the antenna in the lid, and it's not going to do as good a job, obviously, as one that's sticking out.
Right.
But you can get a more active one that's actually a transmitter receiver, and the Radio Lab sells those as well.
Okay.
So they say this is their ultimate long range mobile Wi-Fi. Oh, wait a minute, they have one that's even like got an antenna like you'd put on your car, like a whip antenna.
Right, I saw that.
you could get really wacky with this thing.
Right.
So, I don't have any experience with these specific kits. I have tried Radiolab stuff. They do what they say they do. These are the guys now for Wi-Fi extenders and Wi-Fi antennae. Okay. So, I mean, they have a long-range traveling kit that has a directional antenna that looks like a microwave antenna that you aim. That's $200. I mean, I don't know how crazy you want to get. And I think if you pack this in your suitcase, you might have some explaining to do.
I don't want to be at the security checkpoint. No, that's okay. Just a little something that'll fit in, a little small portion of my briefcase that I can attach.
Yeah.
Boom. Check my emails. If I need to do some work while I'm down there, I'll be able to do it without having to sit in the lobby all day.
Exactly. I think that's the way to go.
All right. Sounds good. Well, thank you very much. You did a lot more than that other competitive computer.
Oh, yeah? Did you call that other guy?
I call that other guy. He didn't have a clue.
Well, I frequently don't have a clue. I think the key is between the two of us, one of us is going to get it right. Steve, I'm so glad you listened to the show. Thanks a lot. And safe travels to you. You do have to these days be a little bit careful what you pack in your luggage. We had on the TV show, we have a guy who does a lot of little hacking stuff for us. And he made it. It was really cool. A USB charger that does it on batteries. So you put two AA batteries in, and as a standard USB connector, and then things that charge via USB, you could plug them in. I guess you could get an adapter for a cell phone. You could buy these commercially, but he said, it's cheap to make one. He put it in an Altoids tin. However, he had to fly to the TV show, and in his luggage now is an Altoids tin with some handmade electronics, soldered wires, connectors. And the big mistake he made, and I want to warn you about this if you're going to do these things, he used a hot glue gun, and just to really make sure that thing was in there, he used a lot of hot glue to hold that circuit board in the Altoids tin. So he's getting on the plane, and the marshals come up and said, Mr. Lynn Harris, can we see you in room 304? And they take him to room 304. They've got his suitcase open, and they've got this Altoids tin. They say, what is this? And, of course, they went back and forth. He showed him. He charged it and everything. They said, well, you got to understand that all this excess glue from the glue gun looks exactly like plastic explosive to our X-ray machines. This couldn't look more like a bomb if it were a bomb. It's in an Altoids tin with wires sticking into it. So you got to be careful bringing these. Nowadays, we live in a different time. You can't just bring this stuff, this long-range antenna. It's got a tripod. It's got what looks like a microwave antenna. It's in a kit. I'm not sure I'd want to carry that onto a plane. It doesn't look like a weapon, but it looks like you're up to something. Something no good. It's getting harder and harder to travel these days. You got to really think about what you're carrying with you. 8888-ASK-LEO. I tell you, we're going to have to take a break real quickly, but I just want to say hi to Kate because I know she's on the line. She's in our chat room from Lancaster, California. Hi, Kate.
Hi, Leo.
You're on the line, but I am going to take a break. Just what do you want to talk about before we go to the break?
I wanted to praise Carbonite for saving my bacon, and I wanted to let you know that I just bought a brand new iMac, and I need your advice.
Excellent. I love that. Praise our sponsors all you want, Kay, and do hang on the line because we'll talk about your new Mac and how to prep it, how to get ready, how to get working with your new Mac. That's exciting. Kate's in the chat room. You could be too. irc.dslextreme.com. Our show notes are online at techguylabs.com. More of your calls coming up too. And the GizWiz, Dick DiBartolo. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. 8888-ASK-LEO to talk about high tech. We're talking to Kate in Lancaster, California. She's got a brand new Macintosh. Which one did you get, Kate?
iMac.
How do you like it?
Well, I haven't taken it out of the box yet. I'm afraid to.
It's not your first computer, is it?
No, I've had many, many, and I used to be a Mac person, but back when they were the little tiny boxes.
Right.
So,
you know what? You're going to take it out and you're going to say, oh, it's not so scary.
I know. I've been reading the Pogue book, The Missing Manual.
That's a very good book.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I'm really excited, but I have some questions for you before I take this leap.
Okay. And I also want you to say good things about Carbonite.
I absolutely will. I've been a good little twit and followed all your advice. And I subscribed to Carbonite, and about 1 week after they said I was 100% backed up, my motherboard died.
Ooh.
And took out the hard drive.
Ooh.
So my PC hard drive is saved on Carbonite, but now I have to find out how to get it over either to an external drive or over to the Mac.
Yeah, you'll want to restore it to a PC before you get it over the Mac because their Mac clients do any minute now. But it's really easy. When you get to the restore part, you just log on to Carbonite and you say, I have an account and I want to transfer my hard drive, my account to this computer, and it will automatically restore it. Now, you have to understand that Carbonite is an online backup system, so it's only as fast as your internet access. It'll be faster to restore than it was to upload. But it takes a while to get the whole hard drive up there, right? I mean,
it took weeks.
Yeah. But that's it just kind of trickles up in the background. And the thing is, once you get, you know, the first backup takes the longest, as with any backup system. And then once it's up there, then it's just uploading changes. And so that's much faster. You know, it's saved my bacon a couple of times now. You know, any backup solution that works is worth its weight in gold because it's going to happen.
Right.
So I hope you'll have a good backup plan for your Mac, too.
Yeah. Well, I need your advice on a good backup program for the Mac.
Well, okay. Carbonite is going to do a backup program for the Mac. Mozy.com has Mac now. It's a very similar idea.
Okay.
But I also think, and this is what I did for my new iMac, is I just got an external hard drive.
Okay, I'm doing that.
Yeah. And then you can use, there are a lot of programs. I like Super Duper.
Okay.
It's free for the basic functionality, which is all you need. And it just runs, on a schedule. There's another one. The one I use is not free, but is very nice to have because it's just automatic. It's called ChronoSync. ChronoSync.
Okay.
It's shareware, and it runs all the time in the background. It's kind of like Carbonite, but it's a local backup.
Okay.
And so it'll always be backing up to that external hard drive on schedule. You'll always be up to date. It's peace of mind.
Okay, yeah. Definitely want to do that.
Yeah.
My biggest concern right now is I've got a 20-gig iPod, and it was a Windows iPod, and my iTunes is on Windows, and I don't transfer all of that over to the Mac, or is it even possible?
It is possible. Apple doesn't make it possible, but you can make it possible.
Okay.
Apple's afraid, probably wasn't Apple. I'm thinking more and more it's the record companies that make Apple do things like this, but somebody, Apple or the record companies, are afraid that you would use this iPod as the world's finest piracy device.
Right.
20 gigs of music here, take it. So there's when you dock it on your Mac for the first time, it'll read it fine, by the way. It's just because Mac can read Windows format. It's the vice versa that's the problem.
Okay.
But the Apple will have no trouble with the iPod. But what it'll say is, this iPod is registered, it synchronizes with another iTunes. Would you like to start syncing with us? And by the way, it's going to erase everything on the iPod. So say no!
Okay.
In fact, before you even hook up the iPod, what I would do is download a little program called iPod Rip. Now, there are a lot of programs that will do this. Sonuity is one. It's iTunes backwards. That's free. But iPod Rip gets your playlists, too. And I personally have a lot of playlists. And I don't want to lose those.
Right.
So it's not free, although you can try before you buy. You could try it, I think, for 30 days unrestricted. So since you're only going to be doing this once, go ahead and do it. It's from thelittleappfactory.com. Thelittleappfactory.com. It's called iPod Rip. So what you'll do is you'll plug in your iPod. You'll be very, very careful not to say sync now because you'll erase everything.
Okay.
You'll plug in your iPod. You'll run iPod Rip. It'll show up. iPod Rip will say, oh, look, I see all these programs. Would you, these files. Would you like me to transfer them to your iTunes? And you say yes. And it goes, just copies them all over. And then it's on your new Mac. You've actually backed up, moved your music collection from your PC to your Mac.
Excellent. Because I know there are some menus in the iTunes that I didn't know if I was supposed to do any of those pull-down menus.
Well, the main thing is just to be careful you don't synchronize with your new iTunes or we'll erase everything.
Okay.
Now, Apple has done some interesting things. And you know, about, I don't know, a year ago, 6 months ago, all of a sudden this new feature showed up in iTunes that says when you dock this iPod to a new Mac, it says, would you like me to transfer your purchases over?
Yeah.
I thought, why is it doing that? That's odd. Well, now we know because... These new Wi-Fi enabled iPod touches allow you to buy music online and transfer. And so you'll have new music on your iPod. You need a way to get it into your iTunes. That's why we have this transfer purchase feature.
Oh, yeah.
But that's only purchased music. It doesn't do it with stuff you've put on there. You've ripped. So that's why iPod Rip is the way to go.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Kate, it's great to have you in the chat room. It was great to talk to you in person. Call again soon, okay? Coming up, it's our weekly GizWiz. Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer. You stay right here. Tech Guy is brought to you by DSL Extreme. Call 866-2-GET-NET or visit them online at dslextreme.com. From the Tech Guy Labs in Northern California, I am Leo Laporte. We'll get back to the phones in just a second. 888-ASK-LEO. But let's take a little break right now for a crazy gadget from our crazy gadget guy, the Daily GizWiz. Actually, it's the weekly GizWiz, isn't it? Dick DiBartolo. Yes. Hey, Dick.
How you doing?
Good. Mad's maddest writer. He is in every episode of Mad Magazine, has been for the last, I don't know, 40 years. What are you doing this month in Mad Magazine?
This month I am doing...
The new one. It must have just come out, right? Because, well, we'll soon. This is September.
The September issue. Let's see. I left it on my desk in the office. I'm doing TV shows reported to be in the works.
Oh, I can't wait.
All right. So next Saturday when we talk, I'll tell you something.
Bring it along. I'd love to hear it.
We'll
tell you, in fact, afterwards how you can get a copy of autographed copy of that magazine from Dick in his little What the Heck Is It contest. But first, let's get our gadget of the week. What do you say?
Gadget of the week. Okay. Well, you have fans who like your podcast. You have fans who like The Lab with Leo. Yes. But do you have a bed fan?
No. I have a bed pan. What's a bed fan?
Yeah. Oh, okay. A bed fan. That's actually kind of clever. It's a cooling system for your bed. Actually, it works. I set one up. So basically, two little intake fans. The little stand comes all set to go. So you undo your bed, the sheets and everything. You stand the little bed fan at the bottom of the bed, and then it comes with an adjustable height bar. You make the height bar about 2 inches above the mattress. Then you put the sheet over the bed fan and the blanket over the bed fan. And it comes with two little wedges that go in on either side of the bed fan. So it keeps your blanket and sheets tucked in. And then the bed fan comes with a little rheostat so that when you turn it on, two little twin fans blow cool air between the sheets.
Why would I want a wind going in between my sheets?
Don't you ever twist and turn at night trying to find the cool part of the sheet because where you're laying has gotten very warm?
Oh, no, that's true. No, you're right.
Yeah. So, you know what? You could probably use it as a way to be able to lower your air conditioner because to keep the sheets cool, you have to get the room down to like, you know, 61 degrees. But with a little bed fan, it's actually and you can turn the fan down to so that it's just a slight breeze in there. Or you can, if you turn it to full high, you can actually see it. Yeah, you can see the blanket rise.
Ripple.
Up.
Like you're inflating.
You could tell people, look at it, it's a magic flying.
Now, did you try this?
I did try it.
Did you like it?
It's very quiet. Unfortunately, the past three nights, it's been 61 degrees at night in New York City. So after an hour of the bed fan, I have to get out and shut it
freezing.
Off.
Well, this makes sense, though, because when it's hot. You know, I hate, and this is one of the reasons I moved out to California. I hated those muggy, hot nights. You cannot get comfortable. So this would be great for summertime in New York City.
This is exactly. Yeah. And I was talking to the people who make the thing. And I said to the guy, you know, it sounds happy, but if this is, you know, one of those $200 items, it's just not going to happen. And the guy said, no, it's under $69.95.
Oh, wow. That's perfect.
It's perfect. Yeah. So it's Bedfan, and it's simply bedfan.com. And, you know, if you're one of those people who has night sweats or you really want it to be extra cool, and, you know, if it's two people in bed, just make sure that the bed fan is just at one end of the bed and not in the center. Right. But it's really fun and it's very quiet.
Yeah, I was going to say it's quiet enough not to keep you awake.
Oh, yeah. No, you don't. It's a whisper.
What's it whispering? Go to sleep. It's hot.
Exactly. Right. No, it's whispering. Oh, I'm cold. Whoa. What's that, an iceberg?
I'll tell you something will warm you up. It's the What the Heck Is It contest. You go to gizwiz.biz, that's Dick's website. Guess what it is? It's not easy. Or come up with the wackiest answer. And what are you giving away? A dozen, two dozen?
Yeah, we give away 2 dozen for the right answer. And 2 dozen for crazy, silly answers.
That's
yeah.
very generous of you. All autographed by Mad's maddest writer,
yeah.
Dick
Who's
DiBartolo.
That?
You.
Oh, me. Oh, that's right. Okay.
For crying out loud. I think you're the only one that's ever been. Was there somebody else who was Mad's maddest writer?
No. There was Don Martin, who was called Mad's maddest artist.
Right.
And when I was talking to Bill one day, and I said, Bill, you know, I'm on radio, on television, and people always want a handle. I said, can I be Mad's Maddest Writer? And he said, if anybody's Mad's Maddest Writer, it's you. You have my blessing. Take that as your title.
Excellent. So, isn't that sweet?
Yeah. So,
Dick, we're out of time.
Are you podcasting's perkiest podcast?
Yes, that's me.
Oh, okay.
I'm the perkiest podcaster in the world, Leo Laporte. Go to Dick's site, gizwiz.biz. He also sells those Inca pens, those great pens that write anywhere with the Gizwiz logo on it. And we'll be talking Monday through Friday on my Netcast network, twit.tv, with the Daily Gizwiz, and every weekend right here for the Weekly Gizwiz. Dick, we'll see you then.
I'll be here.
He's the perky Dickie D. Yes, he is. All right, let's go back to the phones. 8888 Ask Leo. We've got Zach on the line from Gilbert, Arizona. Hey, Zach. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Let me push the right button here. There you go. Hi, Zach.
Hello, Leo. It's an honor and a privilege.
Well, it's a privilege and an honor to talk to you too, my friend.
Hey, a friend of mine, I'm trying to help a friend of mine. He's a writer, and he wants to set up a blog. And the ultimate goal is to create a regular audience. And through the research that I've already done, I understand these are two conclusions that I've come to. And one is, if I were to create a free blog at like Blogspot or WordPress, mm-hmm. once I create the blog there, it has to stay there because it's on their system.
Right.
And then also that I would have a hard time doing any search engine optimization on it because search engines, do they index all yeah. those blogs?
Oh, yeah, they totally do. If you do a Google search, you'll find many Blogspot and WordPress.com blogs.
Okay.
But you're right. If you want full control of it, you know, it's best to host it yourself. I think WordPress and TypePad, the two hosted blog systems I generally recommend, probably have ways to export that content out if you wanted to move somewhere else. But it's easiest if you're doing it on your own system and you've got access to the MySQL database and, you know, you can control it completely.
Okay. So if I were to get a domain name and have a host somewhere, what software would I use to create the blog?
I would use WordPress. In fact, I am in the process of moving my blog back over to WordPress. I've used every blogging platform out there, I think. And right now I have a number of different blogs. I have Tumblio, which is a Tumblog at Tumblr.com. I have a Vox blog at Vox.com. And I have, you know, I post stuff, microblogging, they call it, on Jaiku and Pounce. So there's lots of different places. I'm spread out, and I thought I really should consolidate. And frankly, after looking at all the different blog engines out there right now, I really like WordPress. It's absolutely free. It's very easy to install. And because it's so popular, it's very well supported. If you want to see the work in progress, go to leoville.com/blog. I'm still in the process of getting my this exactly issue that you talked about, getting my old posts out of Vox. I think I have to do it by hand. Vox doesn't yet have any way to do that. But I was able to get all my posts moved over from other blogging engines. So there's posts going back to 2001 right now. I just have to get the last year, which was all on Vox and Tumblr. I have to get that moved over. But then once you do, you have absolute control. I think WordPress is a very powerful engine. To do most of the ultimate customization, you need to be somewhat familiar with CSS, I think, and perhaps a little bit with PHP. You don't have to write PHP code, but you have to be able to look at the code, see what they're doing, and modify it. But it's not very hard. Do you have any of those? Have you done any of that before, Zach?
No, I haven't. So that'll be an interesting challenge. I look forward to trying that out.
What I tell people is, if your only interest is getting a site and getting content out there, then use Blogspot, WordPress.com, or TypePad. Go ahead. If you would like, on the other hand, the thrill, the joy, the pleasure, and the pain of learning how the web works and of doing it yourself, it's not that hard, and you certainly will learn it. And WordPress is a great little tool. I think WordPress is very, very powerful.
Having an export option is also a big deal then, so that I could take it somewhere else.
Yes, and I believe TypePad and WordPress.com certainly do that. I know Vox does not, but has promised it.
Okay.
So, yeah, that is a big issue because, I mean, look, you may never want to move off Blogspot, but then again, you might. And so you're absolutely right. And I've gone jumped through a lot of hoops to get my content out of all these different formats into WordPress, but in most cases, there are ways to do it.
So tweaking it the right way, I could get it to come up in a Google search.
Oh, it will anyway. And the real key is getting people to link to it.
Gotcha.
And then if you want to make sure that Google's putting you in the kind of the right place, there are tricks that you can do. I don't want to say tricks because what you don't want to do is try to game Google. Because if Google senses that you're trying to trick them, you can get banned from Google, which essentially takes you off the net entirely. I mean, you're still there, but since nobody can find you, it doesn't matter. So be careful, but there are things you can do. For instance, the keywords that you think people are going to search for you on. Let's say you're doing a site on bacon sandwiches. The word bacon, sandwiches, snacks, those kinds of words that people are going to search for should be in the title of your page, for instance. They should also be used frequently in the body, in the text. You should register your domain for more than a year because Google is very, you know, Google's biggest concern is these spam sites, which are just link farms. And they're generally, you know, fly by night. They don't register for a length of time. So if you register your site for 2 or 5 years, your name, your domain name, Google says, they're around to stay. It's little things like this that, and what Google says is do the best content and get other people to link to you legitimately. And if you do all that, you'll be not only visible to Google, but you'll rank highly with Google in that particular area.
Nice. Time for one more quick one.
Yeah.
I have already the Jabra Bluetooth headset that I listen to music on.
Uh-huh.
And I also have a Plantronics, single ear
mm-hmm.
headset. I'm wondering if you know if there is a headset, a Bluetooth headset that allows you to stream music to just that one ear rather than having a Bluetooth stereo two headphone type thing.
Let me think about that. Hang on, because we do have to take a break. Looking for a stereo. Just hang on the line. I want to figure out what you're asking for. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Waning minutes of the Tech Guy Show. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. I'm trying to understand. I'm going to go back to Zach for a second because I'm trying to understand. So you don't want a stereo Bluetooth headset like an A2 PC headset. You want mono in one ear, but you want to listen to music?
Correct. The Jabra Bluetooth headphones are Bluetooth headphones as well as...
Right.
I want to go the other way. I want my little one ear piece to also stream music so that I could listen to MP3 files just in my one ear.
So what you're looking for then is a Bluetooth headset that supports a standard called, I say A2DP, it's the stereo standard.
Yes.
And most single Bluetooth headsets just support the headset standard, which is really just for phones.
Yeah, I figured you'd be the guy to ask.
Yeah. I'm just have to think about if I know of any. The A2DP, so let me just see if there's a, what you really want to do, I think a Google search will do it, A2DP Bluetooth headset. Let's see what we can find. Yeah. Plantronics. See, most of these are two-ear headsets, because why would you listen to stereo with one ear?
Yeah, I listen to your podcasts all week long, and those are in monaural anyway, mono.
Yeah.
I figured, walking around with a pair of headphones on is actually pretty obvious. People think you're listening to something. And, you know.
You might just want a phone that supports putting the music audio on the player out through the headset. Most of them don't. And that's kind of the issue, is if they would support the audio from their... What phone are you using?
Singular 8525.
Okay.
AT&T.
Yeah, that might be the issue. I'm looking... All the A2DP headsets I'm looking at have two ears. I mean, you could hide one ear, but they all have two ears. And that's the question. Good question. I don't know. Let's see if we can find somebody. I don't know of one. But somebody will know, Zach. Keep listening. Somebody will say something. We'll put it in the show notes if they do. Or you can email me, leo@techguylabs.com. We're looking for... Get what he's looking for? He listens to mono stuff, podcasts. So he doesn't need a stereo Bluetooth headset. But as is the, I think it's true with his singular, and I think as it's true with most phones, when you're doing the music player, it won't play the music back through the simple mono earpiece. It reserves that for the phone. It plays the music back only through stereo. If you're going to use Bluetooth, it'd be A2DP. So we want a A2DP headset that only has one ear cup. I bet you that doesn't exist, but who knows? We'll look for it. Scott in Placentia, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Scott.
Yes.
Leo here. What can I do for you?
Question I had, I heard you talking about the iPhone today.
Yes, sir.
And I was wanting to know if you think it will ever be released from AT&T to go to other carriers.
AT&T, according to Engadget, is a 5-year exclusive.
Oh, wow.
However, there is at least one hack. In fact, I know two hacks. I know people who have hacked their phones. One with hardware using a special SIM, a turbo SIM. One in software using a program that is not yet out that unlocks that phone and allows you to put a T-Mobile chip in there.
I think I heard that on one of the previous shows.
So what I would watch for is this software to be released. AT&T's lawyers are trying to fight it, and it looks like what's going to happen It's the, I think it's the iPhoneSimFree.com. And it looks like what's going to happen is they're going to sell it not to end users, but to retailers.
Oh.
And so you'll go into a retail store, a phone store, an independent phone store, and you'll buy the iPhone unlocked from them. Or you'll buy it online unlocked from them, and you'll be able to put in any GSM chip. Now, in the U.S., that means really you only have two choices, AT&T or T-Mobile.
Yeah, my kids all have Verizon phones, so it may be a while before
that
comes.
It'll never work on a Verizon. Yeah. The Apple will have to do a new phone because it's a GSM phone. It is not a CDMA phone.
Oh, okay.
That's the problem right there.
Hey, of the PC, pocket PC style phones out there, which is the best one that has the most features that you'd recommend? I know the Palm Trio is pretty popular, but
I like the Mogul. Now, you said you're on Verizon?
Yes.
I think only Sprint has the Mogul. So let me look at what Verizon. I think Verizon. Offer what the Mogul. I like these HTC. HTC makes, in my opinion, the best Windows Mobile handsets. They're really smartphones, and I think HTC does a great job. And so I'm not sure which ones Verizon offers. Let me just quickly run over to the Verizon site, and I can tell you. You have to put in your zip code. I don't know why they do that, because you know what? It's always the same phones. Maybe they're tracking who's visiting them. Smartphones here. Looks like they offer, they got the Q, which I'm not crazy about. Yeah, it's the XV6700 is the closest to the Mogul. But the problem with the Verizon phone, it has that little bump on it, which I'm not crazy about. That's the antenna. It does give you better antenna that way. And it's $299 with activation. The XV6700, it's a really nice phone. A keyboard, the keyboard slides out. So you have a full keyboard, basically.
Oh, okay.
Now, if you prefer something with a smaller keyboard or built-in keyboard, they do sell the Q, which I'm not crazy about, and the Trio, which, you know, I like a lot. If you want Windows Mobile, the Trio 700WX is pretty good. It has a full keyboard. I think for a smartphone, you want that keyboard in some form or fashion. Are you going to use it for email, surfing the net?
No, I actually use the Pocket PC that I carry. I have an older Dell X30.
So you want to replace your Pocket PC.
I kind of want to cut down on how many different things.
Yeah. Take a look. I think you'll like the 6700. I think it's pretty nice. I wish they had the Mogul, which is the next generation up from that. And maybe they will soon. That's really nice.
That's like a Windows CE-based software?
It's based on Windows Mobile 6, which is great. It's the next generation of the Pocket PC you have, the XM you have.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, I think you'll like it a lot. And, of course, it's got a phone built into it, which is handy. All right, I have to leave. I hate to do it, but you can catch more Leo all week long on TWIT.TV, twit.TV. And I hope you'll join me next week right here. I am the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for The Tech Guy. Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to hear the show live, check your local listings or visit our website, leo.am, for a list of stations where you can hear The Tech Guy radio show live on the air. You can also hear archived shows at leo.am and subscribe to our podcast there, or open your podcatching client and subscribe to the feed at leo.am/podcasts/KFI. Thanks to Howard Bailey for the music for this podcast. You can find more of Howard's work at soundclick.com. Thanks to Premier Radio Networks for syndicating the show. Most of all, thanks to you for listening. This is Leo Laporte. I'll see you next time on The Tech Guy.